Daphne du Maurier, 1907 to 1989, was a highly influential British novelist, short story writer and playwright, celebrated for her richly atmospheric storytelling and psychological depth. She was born in London into a distinguished artistic family. Her father, Sir Gerald du Maurier, was a renowned actor and theatre manager, and her mother, Muriel Beaumont, was an actress. This creative environment strongly shaped her literary ambitions from an early age. Du Maurier achieved international fame with Rebecca in 1938, a Gothic novel exploring memory, jealousy, and identity, which won the National Book Award and was later adapted into an Oscar-winning film by Alfred Hitchcock. She followed this success with a series of popular and critically respected novels, including Jamaica Inn, 1936, Frenchman's Creek, 1941, My Cousin Rachel, 1951, The Scapegoat, 1957, and Raw Britannia, 1972. Her works are often marked by haunting settings, morally ambiguous characters, and themes of obsession, power, and betrayal. She was also master of the short story. Collections such as The Apple Tree, Not After Midnight, and The Blue Lenses showcase her talent for unsettling, slow-building suspense. Several of her stories inspired classic films, most notably The Birds and Don't Look Now, further extending her cultural impact beyond literature. Most of du Maurier's writing was inspired by Cornwall, where she lived for many years. The rugged landscape and the sense of isolation deeply influenced the mood and the settings of her fiction. Despite sometimes dismissing her own work as mere entertainment, du Maurier is now widely regarded as a major literary figure whose novels and stories continue to be read, studied, and adapted worldwide. We're in the studio and we're reviewing Daphne du Maurier's Frenchman's Creek.
Well, I love Daphne du Maurier. She's one of my favourite authors. I loved Rebecca. I liked My Cousin Rachel a little less. And I would say Frenchman's Creek is a little more like Jamaica Inn. It's not, in my opinion, it is not as good as Rebecca, but there were a lot of classic Daphne du Maurier themes in this book, which make it quite a compelling read.
Yeah, she's very strong on women, isn't she?
Oh, yes.
Yes, and I felt that Donna was quite a strong woman, although I felt when I first met her, and she's travelling from London to Cornwall, and she's made this mad dash to go to the house in Cornwall, I thought she sounded quite petulant and quite spoiled. I thought, I'm not sure I'm going to like this character. But as the novel progressed, I did start to like her. I did understand her reasoning.
Yes, I would say the understanding is important. Actually, I still didn't really like her, but I did understand why she did what she did and why she felt like she felt. So I empathised with her, but I did find her a little bit irritating at time.
A little bit spoilt, maybe, is the phrase. Yeah.
So, I mean, the setup in a nutshell is that she has this posh life in London. Mm. She's got two young children. She's not particularly happy in her choice of husband, Harry. But not only her husband, in the life that he represents. She feels very hemmed in. Mm. She needs to be able to express herself. And possibly because of this, I'm not giving anything away because this is right at the beginning of the book. It refers to a very silly choice she made to dress up as a highwayman and mess around with her husband's best friend, and they frightened a local.
She marauds around London and does end up scaring someone quite a lot. And she seems mortally ashamed of her actions and of her lifestyle, like you were saying. She hasn't.
Yeah, so she's escaping, isn't she, with her children. And because Harry is so rich, he has a country property in Cornwall. It would be Cornwall because this is Daphne du Maurier, who loved Cornwall.
Yes.
And goodness me, she describes the landscape vividly, doesn't she? It's extraordinary.
That is one of the absolute highlights of the book.
It's beautiful.
The descriptions of Cornwall and the ruggedness and the beauty. Mm. And obviously she's talking from it from a time before it got, you know, wildly populated like it is now. But yes, it's absolutely stunning. And I got the real sense of being there.
Yeah, yeah. You could smell things. You could hear things. You could touch things.
Yeah.
So that is a really high point of the book.
Let's just pause here and take an excerpt from the book where Daphne du Maurier describes Cornwall and particularly the Frenchman's Creek.
She put on a faded gown, which she would not mind tearing, and a silken handkerchief around her head, and slipped out of her own house like a thief. She followed the track that she'd found in the morning, but this time plunging down deep into the woods without hesitation. The birds were astir again, after their noonday silence, and the silent butterflies danced and fluttered while drowsy bumblebees hummed in the warm air, winging their way to the topmost branches of the trees. Yes, there once again was the glimmer of water that had surprised her. The trees were thinning. She was coming to the bank, and there, suddenly, before her, for the first time, was the creek, still and soundless, shrouded by the trees, hidden from the eyes of men. She stared at it in wonder, for she had had no knowledge of its existence, this stealthy branch of the parent river creeping into her own property, so sheltered, so concealed by the woods themselves. The tide was ebbing, the water oozing away from the mud flats. And here, where she stood, was the head of the creek itself, for the stream ended in a trickle, and the trickle in a spring. The creek twisted round a belt of trees, and she began to walk along the bank, happy, fascinated, forgetting her mission, for this discovery was a pleasure quite unexpected. This creek was a source of enchantment, a new escape, better than Navron itself, a place to drowse and sleep, a lotus land. There was a heron, standing in the shallows, solemn and grey, his head sunk in his hooded shoulders, and beyond him a little oyster catcher, pattered in the mud. And then, weird and lovely, a curlew called, and rising from the bank flew away from her down the creek.
Donna certainly does manage to escape a bit, to do things for herself, to forget at times that she's a mother. Starts leading really a very different lifestyle. This is sort of the middle of the book, and then the real tension comes when her two worlds collide. So it is a very exciting book. As a mother, I did find her actions quite frustrating, quite selfish. I think she didn't always put her children first. But as I said, I did understand why she did it. And although I felt sorry for Harry, I also understood why she felt the need to escape from him.
The contrast in the landscape, because there are sections where she describes her life in London, which sounds very hemmed in.
Yes.
They're right in the middle of everything. I think they're near Regent Street. And then she goes to this wild and completely unspoilt area in Cornwall. And it kind of runs parallel with how she's thinking, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
So sort of being hemmed in and then having this freedom.
Sprawling countryside.
And she starts running around with barefoot in the garden. And she doesn't want to see anybody. She doesn't want to see any of society that happened to be around Cornwall. Yeah. And there are people she could see.
And the descriptions of some of the local people who she's trying to avoid are amazing. So vivid.
There's a particularly interesting description of Lord Godolphin, who happens to be one of the local aristocrats that lives near Donna in Cornwall. And he has a rather interesting bulbous nose. So let's just take a quick break here and listen to an excerpt from that particular description.
It's many years since you and your husband condescended to visit Navron. In fact, I may say, you have become strangers. I knew Harry very well when he lived here as a boy.
Indeed, said Donna, fascinated suddenly by the growth at the side of his nose. She had only just noticed it. How unfortunate, poor man. And then she glanced away quickly, for fear he should realise she was looking, and...
Yes, he continued, I may say that I used to count Harry as among my dearest friends. But since his marriage... We have seen so little of him. He spends his time in town.
A reproach to me, she thought, very natural, of course, and I'm sorry to say Harry is not with me, she told him. I'm here alone with my children.
That is a great pity, he said.
And she answered nothing, for what was there to say?
My wife would have accompanied me, he continued. But she does not enjoy very good health at the moment.
He paused, uncertain how to continue, and Donna smiled. I quite understand. I have two small children myself. At which he looked a little abashed and bowed.
We hope for an heir,
he said. And... Of course, said Donna, fascinated once again by that growth at the end of his nose. How distressing for his wife. How did she endure it? But Godolphin was talking again, saying something about his wife being very glad to welcome her at any time. There were so few neighbours, and so on and so forth. How boring and heavy he was, thought Donna. Was there no middle course between this solemn, pompous pretentiousness and the vicious frivolity of Rockingham? Would Harry become like this if he lived at Navron? A great turnip, with eyes that said nothing, and a mouth like a slit in a suet pudding. Of course, said Donna, fascinated once again by that growth at the end of his nose. How distressing for his wife! How did she endure it? But Godolphin was talking again, saying something about his wife being very glad to welcome her at any time. There were so few neighbours, and so on and so forth. How boring and heavy he was, thought Donna. Was there no middle course between this solemn, pompous pretentiousness and the vicious frivolity of Rockingham? Would Harry become like this if he lived at Navron? A great turnip, with eyes that said nothing, and a mouth like a slit in a suet.
What I'm not clear about is where this book falls in her publication order.
But it's not really gothic, is it, in the sense that it's a straightforward romance story. Mm. There's the beautiful heroine, mm. and then we have the dashing pirate, and who also happens to be good-looking and very, very sophisticated. And it's a sort of a love story.
Yeah, it is, but it's also got touches of crime and adventure, hasn't
yes.
it? It's very
yes.
satisfying. It's sort of cross-genre.
Yeah, it's not as psychologically demanding as Rebecca.
And possibly not as rewarding, but I'm glad I read it. I did really enjoy it.
I did too. It kept you interested the
oh,
whole
definitely.
Way through. You really
yeah.
wanted to know what was going to happen with them. And it wasn't always clear. I mean, the Moria is very clever at misguiding and misdirection.
Is, yeah,
so it,
yeah.
it, well, the whole way through, it was very good at that. And even towards the end, I wasn't quite sure what was going to happen. What did you think about the dialogue between Donna and Jean-Benoît Aubrey?
I love the to and fro. It reminded me of Much Ado About Nothing, Beatrice and Benedict, just that constant sparring. And they're well-measured, witty opponents, aren't they?
Yes.
I don't necessarily mean there are jokes flying here and there, but they are both clever. And I did enjoy those dialogue
passages. I enjoyed them too. And in their first encounter, that Donna, she was sort of hanging around the creek, and she gets taken to a ship, and that's where she meets the pirate. And of course, she's quite annoyed at first when she first meets him. And then there's a great to and fro between them, like you say. It's an interesting conversation, but you can see they are very similar.
Let's just pause here where we hear our heroine Donna speaking to Jean-Benoît, the pirate, at their first meeting.
And he opened a drawer in the table and took out a volume, the pages of which he proceeded to turn slowly with great gravity. Prisoners. Method of capture, questioning, detainment, their treatment, etc., etc. He read aloud. Yes, it is all here. But unfortunately, these notes relate to the capture and treatment of male prisoners. I have made no arrangements, apparently, to deal with females. It is really most remiss of me. She thought of Godolphin again, and his fears, and in spite of her annoyance, she found herself smiling, remembering his words.
As the fellow is a Frenchman, it's only a matter of time.
His voice broke in upon her thoughts.
That is better. He said.
Anger does not become you, you know. Now you are beginning to look more like yourself.
What do you know of me?
She said. He smiled again, tilting forward on his chair. The Lady St. Colomb, he said. the spoilt darling of the court, the Lady Donna who drinks in the London taverns with her husband's friends. You are quite a celebrity, you know." She found herself flushing scarlet, stung by the irony of his words, his quiet contempt. "That's over," she said. "Finished and done with."
"For the time being, you mean?"
"No, forever." He began whistling softly to himself, and reaching for his drawing, continued to play with it, sketching in the background. "When you have been at Navrant a little while, you will tire of it," he said, "and the smells and sounds of London will call to you again. You will remember this mood as a passing thing."
"No," she said. But he did not answer. He went on with his drawing. She watched him, stung with curiosity, for he drew well. And she began to forget that she was his prisoner, and that they should be at enmity with one another.
I love the way he questions her. She says, "Well, I'm a good mother." He said, "Are you? You're here. Why are you here if you're such a good mother?" I was like, "Yeah, bring it on."
He does seem to know a lot about her, doesn't he? And he knows of her reputation in London.
He does.
And I think that's quite important, because he sort of spots that she's run away from it. And I think that's an important part of the novel as well. He knows why she's there. And to a certain degree, he's run away from his life as well.
Mm.
So they're both sort of running away from past lives. And I think maybe that's what draws them together.
Yeah.
But you say they are well matched in many, many ways. And again, that's what drives the story, their relationship. Should we do our three reasons for listening to this audiobook?
Well, first of all, listeners, if you like the West Country, if you've ever been on holiday there, or as many people do, just fall in love with it once you go, then this is a really good book for you to be listening to. Daphne du Maurier is so passionate about that part of the country, and that comes through in her writing. If you like, and I'm going to call it an adventure story. Yes, it is a romance, but I think it is first and foremost an adventure, because part of it is personal adventure. If you like an adventure story, then it's great as well. But also, if you've ever felt really restricted in your life at any point for any reason, maybe being in a job that you don't like, or a marriage that isn't working, or very restricted by your parents' ideals or something, then you will find points of identification in this book.
That's a really good point, I think. I like a good old-fashioned romance story, stroke adventure, like you say.
Yeah.
Kind of will they, won't they? Are they ever going to get together? I mean, that's always appealing, I think. And she does this extraordinarily well in this novel. Daphne du Maurier, if you've never read her, please do and start, because she's absolutely definitely worth getting into, isn't she?
Yes.
She's a fantastic author.
I don't think this is her best book, but her best book is so good that you'll still find this. I would give this probably 7.5 out of 10.
Yes,
I think it's still a really good book.
It's a really good book, I agree. That's probably a good score to give it out of 10. And most of her novels have been translated into film, plays, TV series, because they're so visual.
Yeah.
And I think that's another point. It gives you such a good sort of visual understanding. And she's known for being a psychological writer and a gothic writer. So again, if you like that kind of thing, it's definitely worth a listen. This one isn't necessarily of that ilk.
No, it's not. It's
but
not.
It does give you a very good taste of quality of writing.
Yeah,
really.
And I think also, I've said three, but if you're a feminist, it's quite an interesting book as well, isn't it? It throws up some interesting pros and cons to feminism, shall we say, and some interesting issues that she has to deal with because she is a woman.
Yes. Brilliant. So thank you so much, Debbie.
Not at all.
As I say, we really did enjoy this particular audiobook, and we'll see what we're going to do next month.
Yes, please do remember, listeners, if you have any suggestions for Marley and I to read, then please let us know.
Do let us know. I shall give you the phone number at the end of this particular item. Thank you.